Those Damn Ross Kids is a podcast for adults, and the opinions expressed do not reflect the opinions of our employers or even ourselves. We'd like to hear from you. Give us a call at 419-528-TDRK to leave a voicemail, and we just may play it on the show.
Sex in the Garden of Sodom.
I was about to do Foley for that, but... What's the strangest thing you've ever hit with your car?
I think I've ever hit anything strange.
No?
A tumbleweed?
Oh, from when you lived in the desert.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hit a bat on the way here.
No, you didn't.
I hit a bat.
'Tis the season.
It's spooky. No, he was flying in circles in front of my car. He was moving kind of like I would move if you picked up that vial of acid you have next to you.
Yeah.
And threw it in my face.
Yeah.
He was flying and then... I felt a leathery on my windshield.
That sounds like sex in the Garden of Sodom.
Those Damn Ross Kids, a conversation between brothers, featuring Chris and Cole Ross.
Four and a half years of this,
yeah.
I'm in.
After we put in our dues.
I'm in.
Yeah. Well, it's not about us. It's about them. You know, we need to make sure that the listeners are going to stick around for us.
How many people do you need to make a them? Eight?
You guys.
A few more episodes, we'll be all right.
Yep, we're going to be okay. Another year and then you'll be happy.
God, I just need to say.
Okay.
You are reading your... note cards from your iPhone.
Yes, I am.
So your text neck.
Oh, it's in full effect.
Oh, it's horrible.
Text neck in full effect.
You decided to do this whole episode basically doing one of my biggest pet peeves in the entire world.
Which is somebody looking at their phone while they're talking to you?
Yeah, yeah. But it works with you. And the reason being is that I'm not listening anyway. It's like not like I really want to engage in conversation with you.
And see, it works for me too, because I'm never giving my full attention to whatever I'm doing at a given time. So this is putting it out in the open. It's me putting up that flag. It's me having the headphones in while I'm walking down the street. Don't ask me for money, because I'm just going to walk on by.
No, I agree.
I agree wholeheartedly. But before we get too far into this, what episode is this, Chris?
This is episode number 49. Of the internet comedy podcast, Those Damn Ross Kids. Check it.
Look at your screen. I'm looking at my screen.
Is it really?
Yep, yeah, it says Those Damn Ross Kids.
It's 49.
It's 40. It's episode 49. No, I knew it. I put these episodes together, man.
Sometimes you're lost.
I know. Sometimes I'm very lost. But what I'm not lost regarding is my name. My name is Cole Ross, and you are?
I am Chris of the, yes,
Ross. Of the Ross, of the clan Ross.
Yeah.
And this is a free show. No money involved. We do it for validation. We do it to feel good. We do it because we want you to love us.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Please. Just a little bit. I just need to feel good about myself.
It's a great excuse to get together and pour bottles of things down our faces and make parties in our tummies.
Exactly. Oh, man.
To make our heads all swimmy and talk words.
And talk words to the internet. To turn these words into ones and zeros and put them into your ear gullets.
God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Chris, do you have a story for me?
Yeah, I do. Akimo Sato. Akimi Sato? Japanese name. She's a 37-year-old nurse at the Mori Hospital in Kyoto, Japan. She's been arrested for tearing out the nails of an 80-year-old patient with senile dementia.
Okay.
The catch? This isn't the first time she's done it. In January 2006, she was arrested for tearing out the nails, both fingers and toes, of six patients, all of which had been left bedridden for one reason or another. She ended up in jail for under 4 years. After she was released, Mori, she worked in the hospital. They were unaware of her past conviction. She was responsible for changing bed sheets and adult diapers. A coworker discovered blood on a patient's foot, and after investigation, she eventually confessed.
Well, that's kind of like there's a particular flavor of obsessive compulsive disorder that really manifests with kids, where they pull out all of their eyelashes. And you know, it's like they don't have any hair left on their bodies because they pull it out because it's part of an OCD. Maybe she just got off the rails. Furthermore, you know, if you spend as much time at the VFW as I do, you find out that the Japanese, you know, they're just naturally inclined to, you know, towards fingernail related tortures. So she was just doing what comes in her blood, you know. I just said something horribly racist. Okay.
No, it's okay. You can say that. I would prefer to believe that she was just, you know, involved in a game of a terribly painful and screamy, he loves me. He loves me now.
She, you know, Chris, she committed to it.
She did.
She put her back into that.
We all know flowers are scarce in Japan. So why wouldn't you just use toenails?
They're not allowed to have flowers anymore. It was written into their constitution after the war.
Yeah, and yeah. Furthermore, it's part of Obamacare. It's preventative medicine. Those will never be ingrown.
No, those will never, ever, ever be ingrown.
No, never. No,
never. Sadly, ever. I mean, and who
won't... They won't even be grown.
You get to that age, why would you want to bother taking care of your nails anymore, right?
You wouldn't.
What do you want? What do you want these people to be? Do you want them to be Howard Hughes walking around?
Maybe she just thought it was creepy that fingernails and toenails have the illusion that they continue to grow even after death.
Well, you know why that is, right?
No.
Well, it's because the skin pulls
recedes,
back.
Yeah.
Same exactly. Thing. Same thing with
hair.
Said
it gives the illusion that it grew. Don't I'm as smart as you in this instance. And then you try
I know.
To
No, I was saying this, Chris, I was saying this for the listener's sake, and when you do that on, you know, in a format like this, say, hey, did you know? And then you say it. That way you're not treating the listeners like idiots. I'm more comfortable treating you like an idiot than I am treating our fine listeners like an idiot. They didn't do anything to deserve this, whereas you quite certainly did.
One note tab coffin nails. What do you got?
Nothing better than that. Well, since we're talking about people who are a little bit off their rocker, why don't I talk about an elderly woman from Michigan who claims that she has been feeding and caring for a family of 10 Bigfoots for several years. Quote, they get fish every day, a bucket of fruit, a bucket of dry dog food. Their favorite thing, however, Chris, is blueberry bagels. If I'm not baking them, I go to different stores to buy them. I tell them they are feeding the wildlife. She describes the creatures as being 6 to 9 feet tall, with thick coats and broad noses. She claims to have casts of their footprints, but says that the creatures are too clever to be captured or photographed by humans.
This probably doesn't make any sense, but I seem to remember years ago I read an article that the Harlem Globetrotters love blueberry bagels.
Wait a minute. Are you saying...
Read the description again.
Thick coats... Oh, yeah. I don't know how comfortable I feel with that, but I mean, ten of these people. I mean, she seemed to
say that they like to whistle while they work.
That's how they call each other.
Yeah. Do they spin buckets?
I'm very bad at whistling. I just recently learned. This could be. I mean, it could be some kind of team. For some reason, I was thinking Armenians. There was just some kind of migrant Armenian family that was living off of her property, and she was just taking them in and didn't realize.
Wow, Armenians?
Because
they have a thick coat.
Yeah, I mean they're of vague middle not Middle Eastern, but
like a thick brow coat.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
like large, just a, like so one kind of singular
kind
wide,
of a, kind of a Slavic descent. Eyebrow. And I feel like, you know, if we're going to talk about acceptable targets, if we're going to take this ethnic, you know, if you're going to talk about acceptable targets, you know, Armenians, you know, who's going to be offended? Because they're like they're like the Mohicans. There's none of them left. Last of the Armenians, Chris. This woman is feeding the last of the Armenians.
Where are the Armenians from?
Armenia.
That's not a real.
Well, it was, you know, in the early 90s, the Soviet bloc, it kind of, you know, came apart. I mean, Yugoslavia is not a place, but people still call themselves Yugoslavs.
So am I to understand that the EAs lost and the Stans won?
Yeah.
Oh, gotcha.
Man, you were cognizant during this time period. I was playing with my Ninja Turtles, so.
Plainly. I was smoking a lot of salvia back then.
Yeah. Tearing out your toenails. Chris, tell me a story.
All right. There's this pastor, and his name is Mark Driscoll. He's a pastor for the Seattle's fundamentalist Mars Hills Church. And he's released a brochure that's entitled Porn Again Christian. No, I didn't say born. I said Porn Again Christian. He then properly uses a colon and says, a frank discussion on pornography and masturbation for God's men. In it, he's quoted as saying, "Masturbation can be a form of homosexuality because it is a sexual act that does not involve a woman. If a man were to masturbate while engaged in other forms of sexual intimacy with his wife, then it would not be doing so in a homosexual way. However, any man who does so without his wife in the room is bordering on homosexuality activity, particularly," and this is where it gets personal for you, "if he's watching himself in a mirror and being turned on by his own male body."
Chris, there are two things that I have to do in front of a mirror or a video camera: practice my golf swing and yank my crank.
That is what I do.
It's good form. Okay.
Okay, so if what we're doing is already homosexual.
Okay, by his
being
logic,
that we have a shared interest, wouldn't it make sense that we make a date of it?
Yeah, no, I mean, you've got a mirror big enough for both of us.
Absolutely.
Maybe? Yeah, let's do this thing.
Come on. Multiple angles.
I masturbate exclusively in the room at the end of Enter the Dragon.
Yeah. You just want to pause with your hips and then let them unload.
Exactly. No, by this guy's logic, it would be perfectly straight if you were engaged in a sexual act with your wife, heathen, but there happened to be another dude there, and if you were just touching his penis, if you're like, anything that you do while your wife is present could not be considered gay. So
no, he says that's sorta not gay.
Sorta, but you know, we've established long ago that sexuality is this fluid. It's a gradient, right? So I'm just saying, this guy, you know, it's so funny because people who are hung up on this think about it so much they start to codify it into different ways, right? Like, just like, okay, if then, but, like, you have to follow a flow chart. It's like playing Plinko, right? You drop your puck down the top of this flow chart, and then you just hope and pray that you end up in, you know, not gay instead of gay. And then the little yodely guy climbs up and he bangs you.
All you got to do is hope and pray, not gay. That's all you got to do. It's a little limerick for life. That is alliteration. And here's a rhyme: hope and pray, not gay.
Yep.
Hope and pray, not gay.
Not that there's anything wrong with that. I mean, it's, you know, no, we mock because it's stupid.
Dousing myself in fake blood, rocking back and forth in a cold shower, that's wrong. But doing it while saying hope and pray, not gay, we're good.
Well, Chris, I just have to ask, you know, how can anybody be a good Christian soldier if they're walking around with dry skin on their dick? Right? You know, there are very few things that I can say with any certainty, but my penis is thoroughly moisturized. And you know what? That gives me a sense of security. It's kind of like, what was it? Joe Namath? He wore pantyhose? Stockings, rather? Right?
Did he?
Yeah, because he was playing in the cold. You know, just like, yeah, I'm going to do this. I'm comfortable. This is something that makes sense. It's like Ed Wood walking around in cashmere sweaters. Doesn't matter.
How do you do that?
What?
You know, like three sports things.
Chris, I just try to surprise you.
I don't put what you know there about Joe Namath into a sports category. I put that into a justifying my masculinity category that you have filed away.
Okay, yeah. You're following my Library of Congress-esque system.
Where
I gotcha.
Where you have somehow put away justification for behavior.
LOC, man. Yeah, LOC.
It's okay.
Well, Chris, speaking of dressing up in a very strange way, can I tell you about some parenting that's going down in Washington State?
Go for it.
Yeah. Well, two parents in Washington State were upset with their 16-year-old daughter for going out to a party without their permission. Simple enough. We've seen it a million times in after-school specials across the nation. But their chosen punishment, Chris, forcing her to dress up in armor and fight her stepfather with wooden swords for 2 hours straight. The parents are Renaissance fair enthusiasts with a fascination for recreating fights from the Middle Ages. I demand satisfaction, Chris.
On guard.
On guard.
Well, that was a really good one. It knocked your headphones off.
Yeah, it did. I was taken aback by your riposte. Yeah, that's a...
Ooh. Wow, so, yeah. Yeah.
You have a rapist wit. Rapier wit. I stole that from Dumb and Dumber.
Yeah.
We go to that well a lot, though, don't we? The Dumb and Dumber well?
I don't know. Foiled by my own pizza pan?
Yeah. Foil pan.
Yeah.
Foil pan. Man, that's like 2 hours of sustained... Like, that's exhausting, right? Because, I hope so.
She went to a party without her parents' permission.
I mean, she's fine. Like, this wasn't to the death. you know, thank God it was just a wooden sword, but that's tough.
That's not like, really that bad.
Two hours of combat, Chris?
You could make her wear a t-shirt that says, Daddy, there's a little C word, and put cigarettes out, butts out on her forearm.
I understand, but still, that's rough. I'm gonna fight you to the death.
Well, it's wooden swords.
Okay, yeah. So I'm gonna. Okay, let's take this into a different context. 16-year-old daughter clubbed mercilessly by her father for 2 hours straight.
he didn't beat her. They play.
Tell me about fighting.
They play fight it in the woods. That's what LARPing is.
Okay, Chris. Okay, so I understand what you're trying to do here. You're trying to backdoor my argument. You're trying to come around. You're trying to take.
I will never backdoor your anything. What I'm telling you,
Chris,
is
don't distract from the issue. My hatred for LARPing doesn't enter into the equation.
What I'm trying to understand is how they're going to make her be accountable for her actions by pretending that she's somebody else while pretending that they're somebody else.
Well, no.
And going for a frolic and a little bit of fun in the woods as other people.
Chris, just watch some of these videos. Watch some of the videos that I watch while I'm, you know, doing mirror time.
I watched Role Models. I know enough.
Chris, everybody knows that Role Models is a part of our cultural canon. It's our shared heritage. You know, dressing up as the Kiss Army, you know, with Stifler and Paul Rudd.
Paul Rudd.
Yeah. I'm just saying, I have sympathy for this girl because combat is hard. I went to play paintball for the first time a couple months ago, and I was exhausted. Okay, and that's not even like that. I was posted up most of the time. I can't imagine needing to, you know, full lightsaber fight. 2 hours of sustained anything is exhausting. Let alone under threat of physical violence and menace. Okay, my heart goes out to you, little girl in Washington. I assume probably somewhere in the Spokane area. Hit me up.
I'm working on 30 years of sustaining life. You don't need to tell me.
Chris, tell me a story.
Why? No.
Don't get like this, Chris. All right?
Sorry.
I have to edit all your despondency out.
No, you don't. You can leave it. You could leave it in. You could leave it in.
Okay.
A British conservative conservationist? Yes.
Okay.
One more time.
Sound it out. Conservationist.
Okay. From England. British, right?
Well, they probably say conservationist.
He claims that he's lived off of roadkill for 30 years, cooking up owl curries and rat stir fry to make use of meat that otherwise goes to waste. Jonathan McGowan, a 44-year-old professional taxidermist, began his foray into roadkill cuisine at age 14 when he cooked a dead snake he found on the side of the road. It wasn't the greatest meal, but he said he was intrigued and came to see the ecological and culinary benefits of eating only meat he found dead on the side of the road or in the forest. I believe it's a much better meat, he said. It's totally organic, and otherwise it would totally go to waste. To see so many animals in the UK run over every day, even on a short journey, I think it's a wicked waste.
Well, it's free range, right?
Yeah, it's the most free range.
Exactly. It's as free of a range as you're going to get.
Yeah.
Without getting an actual range involved.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's what you want, right? That's what organic farming is. You have something that's enjoying life, and then you just kind of...
I don't think anything's free range. It's not free range, though.
Okay. I'm just saying, the idea is that if you treat the animal better, it'll taste better, okay? So you have something that's just going about its business, trying to get back to its kids, then boom, it's killed out of nowhere. It died not knowing anything that happened. No suffering got into that meat, therefore it's going to taste okay.
An electric fence will teach you a lesson. A road... teaches a final lesson.
Yeah, a road teaches a societal lesson.
Roads are
lesson.
Fences, in other
yeah,
words.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
No, I think that this is more viable over in England because I think they have a lot more fanciful creatures. I mean, you know, you take a 5-mile drive, you're going to see like at least 15 dragons dead by the side of the road, right? A couple of gnomes, maybe some griffins, right? You can get some good fare. I mean, over here, all you have is like possums and pandas.
We don't have pandas.
Oh, man. What's that? What are those things that are like, I've got the long skinny legs and like the little ones are dotted?
14-year-old girls.
Oh, God. I always get 14-year-olds mixed up with pandas.
Yeah.
God. Okay.
Your mistake.
My mistake. Okay. I shipped all those 14-year-olds off to the zoo. I thought I was doing a great ecological favor. Oh, well.
I would like 18 more 14-year-old panda brides.
Wait a minute. For my compound? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't know. This guy, you know, shine on, you crazy diamond, right?
What?
Shine on, you crazy. This guy wants to cook.
No, up. I want you to say more groovy.
Shine on, you crazy diamond.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, he's not like secreting his owl meat into different areas of into different, you know, like school lunches or anything. He's just cooking it for himself and his loved ones. So long as everybody knows what they're entering into,
people eat strange things. I'm not, you know, outraged.
Chris, don't condemn this man just for being. Chris, I want you to return the plane ticket. I don't want you to go over there and settle the score just yet. Okay. Owl might be mighty tasty. Okay. Okay, cool. I mean, it's basically fluffy chicken. So, you ever seen an owl without its feathers?
No.
It's weird.
No, I'm pretty sure my face would implode.
Here's something weird, right, about owls. I worked for a couple of summers at a school supply company.
Yeah, you did.
Not to get too, you know, personal information on here, but I worked in the orders department, and you know they would sell like scientific stuff. But what you don't realize is like you can order and have shipped to you owl pellets.
Yeah, the vomit of the owls.
Yeah, like owl vomit.
Yeah, it's like a you know, a little archaeology pellet.
Yeah, yeah, just like, ooh, that's, you know, that's a rat vertebrae. That's a marmot skull. I think
it looks, yeah, like it,
but that's just weird.
That's a pop tab.
Yeah. The thing that the owl coughs up all wrapped up in its own dead fur, you know,
that is not normal
that you just pick up off the ground and send to school kids. You do it through a company, it's perfectly fine. You do it freelance, you know, all of a sudden you're breaking a bunch of laws. I don't know. But speaking of ridiculous meats, Chris, can I tell you about an absolutely ridiculous burger?
It's in Ohio.
Michigan, actually.
Oh, is it? Okay.
I'm sorry. The Indian, as the Indians call it, Michigan.
Oh.
It's at Mally's Sports Grill.
It's adjacent to Milwaukee.
It means the good land.
Thanks, Alice Cooper.
Mally's Sports Grill in Michigan, known for their massive burgers, has outdone itself. The, quote, absolutely ridiculous burger weighs 338 pounds, which they chose because it's the average weight of the bar's patrons, contains 540,000 calories and costs $2,000. The burger takes 22 hours to cook, has 15 pounds of lettuce, 30 pounds of bacon, 30 pounds of tomato, and 36 pounds of cheese. But Chris, the kicker, it comes with the fries and a drink. So that's where you get you. It's the carbs.
How big is the drink?
You know those Gatorade containers that they dump over the coach at the end of the football game?
Yeah.
Two of those. But oh. I did some math on this, Chris, if I can continue to talk. 540,000 calories divided at 2,000 calories per day for the average recommended dietary need equals 270 days worth of nutritional value, okay? Now, that equals $7.40 per day for like two-thirds of a year's worth of food. Think about like your average food budget, like what you spend. You know, I don't know what you spend on groceries, but you know, like if you had a place big enough to store this where it wouldn't go rancid, like, you know, like Homer's Sub,
it's a viable option.
I'm just saying, you know, we've been worrying about how to feed the poor. You know, let's do this.
We should just get one of those monster burgers.
Well, no, and the great thing about that is that, you know, for a certain time, that's both food and shelter.
You would have to eat your way into the burger.
You would have
house.
To eat your way into it, and then you would eat your way out of it.
And stay away from the bun.
Just stay away from the bun, yeah. Just erect some kind of thing, hold that bun over your head, and you're okay.
I don't like tomatoes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know what a big tomato is, Chris?
What?
That could be a porch umbrella.
Nah, not particularly.
No?
No, I would leave the sesame seed top as the roof and put tomato siding on.
Okay.
And yeah. I'd eat the middle.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'd make a cheese coat for the winter.
Of course, yeah. Well, no, the cheese is the insulation. It's very binding.
Not in my world.
Okay.
It's a coat.
But, I mean, okay, we're tipping our hand here, the 36th chapter of our Ronald McDonald fan fiction that's coming out pretty soon. We have to workshop it a little bit. You know, we're working on quality here. But
I read something the other day.
Okay.
And I'm going to quote it verbatim. A bloody torso, mangled beneath a lawnmower along a road in rural North Carolina, mobilized paramedics and an ambulance until they realized it was all a Halloween gag.
Okay.
The decoration was so realistic, a passing driver saw the scene and called 911 to report that someone was trapped beneath a lawn tractor. The lawnmower stood alone in a yard in Rowan County in western North Carolina. There were no other decorations or signs that may have given other clues that the scene was a fake. After the passerby dialed 911, medics prepared to rush out to the home with a lawnmower tractor and make a rescue.
Have you heard the urban legend about the guy who hung himself in front of his house? And because it was around Halloween time, everybody thought it was a decoration and nobody realized it was a body until he started like putrefying.
I think Mythbusters busted that.
Poor Grant.
Poor Grant.
He spent his life chasing after Carrie.
Why is it when Asians kill themselves, it's noble? Chris, the passersby were like,
it has to do with
honor. He probably feels pretty bad.
It has to do with honor, Chris. Yeah. You know, he built a robot to put him up there and then went on his way.
Neat.
I know, right?
Yeah.
The more you know. Yeah. I'm just picturing that metal plate falling in slow motion into the dust, deceased instead of busted.
With this time-lapse photography, you can see how my air noose robot destroyed my spine.
It's the most tragic explosion ever on Mythbusters. That's the thing that like bothers me about modern day Mythbusters. I love the show. I think it's maintained a very high level of quality. However, the problem is everything is always the biggest thing they've ever done. I mean, the inclination is to go big or go home, but they're constantly talking about it. This is the biggest construction we've done on Mythbusters. You know, you have Adam Savage. I can't believe it. This is the biggest crane stunt we've ever done on the side of a mountain. It's like, stop trying to convince us. You got us. You've been on the air for like 8 years.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Now, on the other hand, this is the biggest episode of Those Damn Ross Kids we've ever done.
You would have thought that we would have saved it for 50, but we're not.
No.
It's here. It's here. We're done.
This is the biggest one.
Hey, Chris, I want to start a dance troupe for at-risk urban youth, okay?
Utes.
At-risk urban youths. It's a jazz dance troupe called the Tapscallions.
What the fuck am I supposed to do with that?
Chris, just take it. You know, just like
you could give me 3 hours of dead air and I can't make that funny.
Chris, you're walking down the street and you see these kids and you think, man, what a bunch of rapscallions they are. Maybe if somebody gave them some time to, maybe somebody gave them some attention, some way to focus their energies and their expression, right? No, they're not rapscallions, Chris. They're tapscallions. Skippa.
Wait, that makes sense because they grew up on the Cosby Show.
Oh. I can't. I mean, the inclination here is
Bill
to do a
Cosby
co-
did.
Is to do
he
a did. Co- he was involved was in
tap,
that program.
No, he was a tap dancer.
Oh, he that's right. Yeah, on the Man from U.N.C.L.E. Yeah,
he put down his piece of cardboard with sand and scooted it out.
Yes, and it's scooping in the bar.
Shoopity doop.
Yeah, exactly.
Boop boop doop boop boop.
Bop bop bop.
He did that as Doctor. Seuss?
Heathcliff. Oh, yeah, Dr. Huxtable?
Dr. Heathcliff Huxtable.
Oh, his name was Heathcliff? Like the Garfield ripoff?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Huh, with the skeleton fish?
No.
And the Puddin' Pops and the... Okay. Chris, Paul Moran, a Northern Ireland man, had a simple plan to turn his feces into gold. His many attempts to get rich in this manner concluded when he put his feces on an electric heater and waited for the science to happen. The result was a fire that caused $4,800 in damages and landed Moran in prison for arson. Simple note tab, Chris. Hot shit.
So he was going to make his poop into gold. Yeah.
Performing alchemy.
We've already done this.
In the tradition of Merlin himself.
As opposed to the version you try to be?
Stop it. I'm talking about the wizard Merlin, not the noted internet personality Merlin Man. Thank you, Merlin. But just taking things and making them into other things through magic, through applied elements, Chris. The humor's bringing them into balance. The cosmic dust that we all spring from can be reconfigured in the crucible of creation. There are elements at play that we must harness.
Are you British now?
I'm very passionate, okay?
Don't drop the tablets, Ezekiel. I was just thinking about whose kid you are. Because I know you're not my brother, any sort of relation. It would be like if Merlin Mann and Louis C.K. had a baby. No, they didn't have the baby. They had the baby in the conventional sense, let it grow to be like 23, 24 years old, and then decided we should have fucking aborted this. And then they cast you away. And you came here to be my brother.
You shouldn't have signed up for the list, Chris. Why would you sign up to be my foster brother?
I didn't. There was a tax man yelling, "Who needs a write-off?" Mom and Dad said, "Here, please."
It was a financial necessity. I got you. God. But you're stuck with me.
Yeah, for the time being.
Now. Story.
I know there's one way that you would have never happened. And that has been found by the fertility doctors at Harvard University and the University of Murta of southeastern Spain. They analyzed sperm from hundreds of men aged between 18 and 22 and found that those who ate a high proportion of junk food had poor quality sperm than those with a nutritious diet. The sperm of men with poor diets was found to be less likely to survive the journey to fertilize an egg, even if the men were a healthy weight and exercised.
I mean, isn't that just doesn't that just play into the notion of fitness? I mean, not just fitness of like, oh, I can do X number of sit-ups. Sit-ups a thing, right? Okay. I can do X number of sit-ups, but like I am a suitable mate. Like I make good decisions, so therefore I'm going to be more successful in the reproductive act.
No, it has nothing to do with that.
No?
No, it has to do with your diet. You are what you eat.
Exactly. It has the consistency and taste of horsey sauce because it is horsey sauce.
It is horsey sauce. This is fake junk, and that's fake seed. You'll find it to be spicy. Thank you.
Keep it away from your various membranes.
Yeah,
I implore you.
No, seriously, you don't want this in your eye.
Yeah, it's okay.
No, you really don't want this in your eye.
That is disgusting. Yeah, that little vignette that you just painted for us, that presupposes that there is somebody who gets off on having fluids in their eyes.
I'm going to squirt horsey sauce all over that roast beef.
Chris, our Arby's McDonald's crossover fan fiction, that's still in the storyboarding phase, okay?
Yeah.
It's disgusting. It's good mood food. Yeah. Hey, Arby's, why don't you market your food as antidepressants more? Yeah.
You should.
Because only people who hate themselves will eat there. I know it because I love your curly fries, and I hate myself.
OneNote tab? Ho-ho rubber.
Ow! Those things are bad for you. Okay. That's a reference that you wouldn't get. So I'm going to leave it in.
You probably should. Because so far I've bested you for about 32 minutes.
Bested. This isn't a battle, Chris. We're all pulling at the same barge, right?
You've stolen two of my stories so far.
Have I?
Yeah.
See, this is why we need to go collabo, Chris. We need to set up some Google Docs. We need to get this.
Do that with you.
No. It's true that we don't have any contact outside of this 2 hours every 2 weeks.
No, if it was up to you, we wouldn't. Because I call you and you're like, first of all, you don't answer your phone like for three times that I call. And then when you answer your phone, you're like, you're doing something else and you're checking on your other podcasts and all that kind of stuff. You're like, oh, look, I charted.
Yeah,
so did I. It smells.
Hey, Chris, I got to go. I got to go with the winning horse. Okay.
Yeah. Well, you should.
It's science, Chris.
I beg you.
It's science.
Yeah.
Do you know where you can find science, Chris?
In an area roped off and marked for it.
And what does that sign
That's
say?
The
I'll
sign
tell you.
Song. What the fuck ever.
Okay. Scientists studying the Mariana Trench, the deepest point on the ocean floor, have discovered a new form of life. These creatures, called xenophyophores, are single-celled amoebas with a 4-inch diameter. They thrive at a depth of 6.6 miles below the surface and make a habit of trapping small particles of lead, uranium, and mercury from the water around them. Chris, I was under the impression that cells were these things that made up our bodies that were little balls of stuff that had little things inside them that performed various functions, and they came together to make tissue and organs and ultimately, you know, form the basis of life itself. The point is, I thought that all cells were small enough to necessitate a microscope. But in the Mariana Trench, which I have talked about at length before, one of the most horrifying places on this planet, I would say more horrifying than the depths of space, because it's right there. It's just got to swim a little bit, and it's right there. There are cells that are the size of softballs. Just roll, roll, roll.
That is omnitarded. It is. It will not catch fire from any direction.
What is the cell or my fixation with the horrors of the sea?
The idea that you think that you can wrap your brain around it.
What do you mean?
You've never raked a lawn. How are you going to dig a trench?
What do you want?
The Mariana Trench.
Right, I know.
Yeah, how
it's
would
not
you
that
know?
Kind of trench. It's not the Death Star, Chris.
So it's not man-made.
It's not. We didn't put them there.
Because that's a miracle. If we went down to the ocean and built a trench like that,
oh yeah,
that'd be something to talk about. This story, not so much. But
Chris, I want to talk about the horrors of the natural world. There are beings on this very planet. We share the oxygen, the elements that are drawn to this rock that are so inconceivable, that are hiding in the cracks, that are beyond the edges of our perception, that would break your mind.
Huh. I'm going to toss this feather in the air, and you watch it slowly fall.
Okay, what? Oh, what are you getting
at? Are you calm now?
So mad. I'm so angry.
Chill out, man. They're not going away. They're prehistoric.
These amoebas, man.
Yeah. They're dinorific.
I forget. Did you have in seventh grade a math teacher who would draw amoeba man on the chalkboard?
No.
Like a little blob that had eyes, like eyes and a smile?
He was called Fried Egg Phil.
It's cool. I don't know.
Show title.
You can't make that supposition, Chris.
You want to draw it though?
I do.
Yeah.
So there you go, Chris. Tell me a story. If you have any left, if I didn't scoop you,
this is my last one. What's it say on a dollar bill? Does it say for all debts, public and private?
Yeah, yeah. E pluribus unum.
That's gonna change in Louisiana.
Novum ordo seclorum. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, because Louisiana House Bill 195 says that those who buy and sell secondhand goods cannot use cash to make those transactions. It's so far flown under the radar, and most businesses don't even know about it. The law states those who buy or sell secondhand goods are prohibited from using cash. The bill is targeted at criminals who steal anything from copper to televisions and sell them for a quick buck. Having a paper trail makes it easier for law enforcement. Pawn shops have been forced to keep records of their clients for years. However, under this bill, they are still allowed to take cash deals.
Right, because they're necessitating a paper trail no matter what.
Yeah, they already have one.
If I were to say, like, hey, here's an iPod, you couldn't give me cash for it from one person to another.
That's what it says.
That's weird. I would figure that of all the places that would be against that kind of government meddling, you know, deep Louisiana, that would be one of them, right?
Well, I mean, you have to realize that, like, you know, 9 out of 10 transactions in Louisiana are either done with alligators or stuff that they've left over from looting in Katrina.
It's an entirely loot-based economy there. Yeah. Still, 6 years on, it's a national tragedy. The Forgotten War, Chris, Korea and Katrina. But that's one of those things that everybody gets. You know, when you go to the fake internet money, you know, like I like my credit card, right? I don't like carrying cash around.
I just had the worst idea ever.
Okay. Share it. This is the place for bad ideas.
It's not a bad idea. It's a horrible thing to say.
Oh, okay. So let's not.
Yeah, but, it's really bad.
Okay, let's not. We'll save it for off mic. No.
We didn't really expect to have to take care of all those people that survived Katrina. But it turns out Michael Brown was the one who forgot to unplug the drain at the bottom of Lake Pontchartrain.
Who's Michael Brown?
He was the director of FEMA.
Oh God!
Damn it, Brownie! I told you to plunge that shit.
This has been Those Damn Roskits.
So as far as homework goes, we would really like it.
If somebody left a goddamn voicemail.
Exactly.
And at this point, I'm going to yell it. I'm going to yell it.
Okay, yell it.
I just want to see if you would be ready.
Shout about voicemail.
No, I'm going to say, leave us a voicemail. 419-528 TDRK.
It's not toll free, but call it, dummy. You've got free nights and weekends.
It's worth it.
Call us and we'll mock you.
Or we'll play you.
Yeah, we'll play you on the air. Don't be shy.
Come on, ho. It's call. Get played.
Get played on the air of our show, of our program. Be immortalized on the internet. This isn't going away. I'm just scaring them off further.
Yeah, you are.
but if you don't want to do that, you can make yourself heard by going to the iTunes listing for Those Damn Roskits and leaving us a rating or a review. Those definitely help us out a lot, raises our visibility, and there's always the good old-fashioned telling your friends about us. And you can like us on Facebook as well. That is facebook.com/thosedamnroskids. Just hammer away at your keyboard with your big old hands, Those Damn Roskids, and all of this stuff will become readily apparent to you. Is there anything else? Are we forgetting anything, Chris?
No, I think we're all set. It's been a while since we've heard from some of our more loyal listeners and followers.
Yeah.
Specifically on the Facebook page.
Don't want you to fall off. We want you to recommend stories. Don't be discouraged if we don't read them right away due to the way that things are structured. It might be a minute, but you'll hear us. You'll hear us dropping in stories, and we'll credit you. Again, internet famous. Internet famous just a step away. It's just a kiss away. Kiss away. Kiss away. I'm saying good night.
Good night.